Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Welcome to the show. Today I'm interviewing Mayan Gordon. She's an entrepreneur and influencer with over 2 million TikTok followers, and she has a lot of ideas and is a really true hustler. On the show, we learn about why she left school early, how she started and grew her first business, along with some epic failures along the way. She gives some great insights into how to think creatively and deal with your fears, so there's a lot to learn this episode, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And on that note, let's just jump into it with Mayan Gordon. Welcome to the podcast. And yeah, so you've been a TikTok influencer for a while and you've been running advice on how to become a TikTok influencer. And you've just been kind of getting your name out there and generally just doing lots of cool stuff. And you've got a really interesting story from being homeless to homeowner, business owner, doing all the things. So a perfect person for the Growth Mindset Podcast, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
So instead of me doing more introduction, can you in your own words give us like a quick like 3 minute summary on you and your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started out growing up in Seattle, Washington, just to give people context of where I grew up in the world. Both of my parents are heavy academics, so they both have PhDs now and are professors at the University of Washington here in Seattle. I currently live in Spokane, Washington, so I didn't go too far away, but spent most of my childhood growing up in Seattle, so surrounded by a lot of interesting cultural ideas, a lot of art, a lot of technology, a lot of learning. So I would say privileged in that aspect. And then going into high school, I was fortunate to go to a school called Lakeside, which is a private school that many, many top entrepreneurs, top kind of minds have come from, including Bill Gates, Paul Allen, many more. And in that school, I really learned a lot about growth mindset and how to analyze information, how to think creatively, and also how to really, really be disciplined. One thing that's really helped me in my entrepreneur career has been just really wonderful discipline and in conjunction with that focus. So focus plus discipline can get you really far in any areas of life. And I was going to college with the idea that I wanted to become a veterinarian. That was kind of like my lifelong dream. I love animals. I currently have 4 dogs, to give you some idea of how much I love animals. And that's what I thought the only option was. I was like, I love animals, but I also want to make a decent living. So my option is become a veterinarian or like a vet tech. And a vet tech makes way less money than the veterinarian does, who can start up their own practice and do all sorts of other things. But in college, a year and a half in, I really came to the realization that college was not for me, that spending another 12 years or 10 years in academia was not going to make me happy. And so that's when I switched to full-on entrepreneurship. I dropped out of school and started doing copywriting full-time, finding gigs off Craigslist and different online job boards. And I really fell in love with that and fell in love with marketing through copywriting, because copywriting is just a wonderful kind of inside look into how many different businesses communicate and think with their customers. And from there, that gave me the bug to want to start my own business. Started up my first business where we sold a smoking accessory called diffuser beads directly to stoners and then also wholesale, so B2B to smoke shops. That's also when I started going to trade shows. I've been going to trade shows for the past 8 years, mostly in Las Vegas, but also a couple other places like Atlantic City and even Denver. And then transitioned into doing a sticker design, t-shirt and graphic design business, because I kind of got bored with the diffuser bead business. It was a single product. There wasn't a lot of room for creativity. And so I did graphic design, sticker printing, and t-shirts for a while until I got burnt out on kind of the manual labor part of that business of just like chopping and cutting stickers and like peeling vinyl to put the designs on the t-shirts. And so that's when I transitioned into glassblowing. I've been doing glassblowing for the past 5 years now, have grown that business pretty successfully. It's what's allowed me to build the bulk of the wealth that I have now, including the duplex that I own, my truck, my travel trailer, my dogs, all that stuff has really come from my glassblowing business and the success with that, which has directly come from social media marketing and understanding really how to market and connect with people through digital space. And then I guess I should throw in there, see, I don't even mention the TikTok stuff sometimes because it's so recent, but in the past 10 months, I've hopped on TikTok and grown actually 2 accounts to more than 2.3 million followers combined. My main glassblowing account has 1.7 million followers, and then I have a food-related account, which is at 660,000 followers. In case you want to check them out, the glassblowing one is World of Glass, and the food one is Joy of Food.
Wow.
And here I am today.
Yeah. All been coming up to this, to be on the Growth Mindset Podcast, obviously.
Exactly. All pinnacling here. This is the climax right now, you guys. So excited.
So when you first mentioned like how you learned to think creatively and then how to be disciplined, like what was it that they were actually teaching you? Was it, because it's kind of a bit of an abstract, like, oh, I just learned these things. Like, what would be?
So I think one of the major things that I, like, obviously it was many little things, but one of the larger concepts or mindset shifts that I got out of that high school experience and those teachers was that every piece of information comes through a perspective and with a bias of some sort. And to be able to really understand that anything you're perceiving, anything that you're seeing, hearing, reading, comes with more information than just the surface level, what's written there, what you see there, because you can also think about who wrote it, who created it, who spoke it, and that gives you this extra layer and depth of context and information and analysis that just opens up the world to you in all these creative, interesting ways and allows you to make all these connections and learn new things that you would have never even thought to learn until you kind of, you know, thought about things in that way.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I love this principle. And once you get it, you can just be curious about anything. Because some of my friends sort of hate like the book, like 50 Shades of Grey or something. And like, they've never even read it. But I read it just because of, I was curious to see what other people were reading it. So it wasn't just like the surface level of like reading it for pure entertainment of the story, but like to think what the writer was thinking, what like the millions of women that have read it were thinking, and like all of these other levels that you can take with it if you just sort of a bit more curious.
Exactly. And then that builds out to the context of like, how do people in general think? And I think that's for me what it always breaks down to. It's kind of like a macro back down to a micro. So you think about, you know, how does this thing relate to many different people? Like you're saying, like all the women who've read that. And then you kind of get to theorize about some ideas about like why you think a certain way versus maybe someone else thinks a certain way. And there's always that comparison I think we have between like our own thought processes and how our brain works and how other people's brain works, because we always have that knowledge of similarity with contrast. So we're all so the same yet so different. And I think that's something that really fascinates us.
Yeah, definitely. It's very like, yeah, it's not black and white sort of, and it's not just gray in the middle. It's kind of like a painting of like the black and white colors kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Interesting. I'm having fun. Okay. So you then like learned this sort of this way to think and then sort of thought about doing veterinarian stuff. And I remember also considering doing medicine, but just thinking like, why the hell would I want to do a degree for so long and then only be in medicine? I'm like, yeah.
What really made me like think about that time contrast was realizing I was only in high school for 4 years and how long that felt. You know, I enjoy learning. I enjoyed some of the social aspect, but I hated my entire life being controlled by, you know, a system or other people. And so I just thought, I was like, can you do that times 2/2? Like, are you really willing to be within a system that is like completely controlling you and telling you what to do? Especially, I'm sure you can relate to this, when you're going in on like the doctor side or the veterinarian side, it's not just like your classes you're committing to, it's all the rest of your free time to study for those classes and do extracurricular activities to make yourself more attractive to the schools that you're going to apply to. So I just realized that I would have to give up all the other things that I wanted in my life, including freedom, to really get that goal of being a veterinarian. And I was like, it's not worth it for me.
Yeah. So you then got out and went into more like entrepreneurship and all these things. So what made you appeal for like smoking accessories in the first place? Was it just something that you were kind of into at the time and you're like, oh, I could make some money out of this, and it's like at least legal compared to doing other things that people do?
So to give you a little context, it wasn't considered legal back when I kind of not started glassblowing, but got interested in glass. So I got interested in kind of the smoking accessories world far before I ever knew I was going to become a glassblower. And that's because, again, I grew up in Seattle, Washington. It's one of the most kind of marijuana cannabis friendly places in the world, I would say. You know, Washington State's incredibly friendly towards cannabis right now. And I grew up in an environment where me and my friends smoked weed. So I knew about the world of cannabis, and it was like exciting because it was still semi-illegal. You know, it wasn't legalized in any recreational fashion, you know, when I was in high school, but it was just starting to go medical. So there was all this like interesting buzz and talk about it. And then also at the same time, I would say, is when the glass industry, specifically related to pipes and smoking accessories, started really growing. So if you're interested in business, the glassblowing industry is kind of a fascinating one to look at in terms of industry growth. So it started out in terms of the smoking accessory side, probably in the early 90s, maybe the late 80s. And there were like 10 glassblowers in the whole United States. That was it. 10 people who knew how to make these pipes, because glassblowing traditionally is kind of a safeguarded, passed down tradition. So back in the day, you'd have to apprentice for years and years, a decade before you could go out and start making any of your own pieces or start really experimenting with your own artwork. So very, very traditional. 30 years ago, they started experimenting a lot more with these cool different designs and colors. There used to only be really four colors in glassblowing. It was amber, green, cobalt blue, and maybe it was just clear. So like really only three colors. Oh, and black. And you know, there's only so much attractiveness when there's not that many colors. And a really fascinating thing is this parallels really digital space as well. Whereas before we had computers, we had fewer shades of colors. We just had what people could print with ink and create with actual physical, you know, material to create these different colors. Once we started making computers and increasing the screen definition and the capacity for us to show different shades and pixels of colors, we now can see tens of thousands of different shades of colors. And this has made us much, much more interested in media. That's why we're all addicted to like our screens, is because we've got these beautiful, vibrant, bright colors, and our eye and our brains are geared to pay attention to light and to color for survival instinct. So it's not something we've evolved away from in any format yet. When you see a bright red or bright yellow or bright pink color, your eye is going to linger on it and stare at it for at least an amount of time longer than you would other colors, because it's primitive, built into your brain.
Yeah, like fires and stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And so as people and artists in the United States started experimenting to make new colors, the industry started growing and people started wanting pieces more. And so it grew from about 10 artists to, let's say, 1,000 artists when I was in high school. And there were now these smoke shops or head shops that, instead of being like grungy and dingy, were like high class boutiques with these beautiful art pieces. And so I'd grown up kind of seeing these different pieces and seeing these shops and just been really drawn into them, I think because of the colors and the artwork, also because of the cannabis allure, but mostly it's just glass. It is a beautiful, beautiful, fascinating art form because of the way the light refracts and reflects to your eye, and then the different color combos. So I kind of got into the whole space that way. And then I started up my first company specifically just because I knew that space. I knew I could sell to people in that space because I knew the customer mindset. Like, I was a customer of smoking accessories. So I was like, okay, just make something you would really, really like. Like, let's come up with a product that you would buy and that you know other people would also really want to buy. So in addition to me having a really good sense of what I want, I also have a really good sense of what other people want who are different from me. I think this is, you know, something important for people to be aware of is like, how accurate are you to being able to portray or guess or put yourself in other people's situations to understand what they are going to think or how they are going to feel? And if you can do that, it gives you like a huge leg up in business for knowing what good ideas are and what bad ideas are. And so basically, me and my husband just brainstormed. We're like, we need to come up with this product idea. And we just thought of a bunch of different ideas and landed on diffuser beads. And part of the reason was we could source it easily. So we were just repurposing airsoft BBs. So we bought airsoft BBs in bulk and then just repackaged them and a cool label on them and added like an extra product feature. And the other thing was, I knew that there was color selection. So the airsoft BBs, we could find them in like 10 different colors, including glow in the dark. And I knew glow in the dark alone was going to be a huge hit. Like, I just, there's certain things I know about people, and it's like, people love glow in the dark, period. So that was a factor. I also knew that because the price point was low enough that people would buy it to try it. And that's a huge advantage with a newer product or a novelty product, because if they buy it to try it, they're actually in this mindset of, I don't have a lot of expectation. You're not like super hyped, like, what? I just got this new product for $10. It's going to be amazing. You're kind of like, let's see where this goes. And then if it does perform well, you're like, oh, I freaking love it. And it puts them immediately into kind of this, I would say, proponent mindset of, you know, I'm now a big fan of this product, versus just like, like, yeah, this product's good. It did what I bought it to do. And so we picked a great product. I had great ideas on how to market it and promote it. And it did very surprisingly well. So this product that was literally Airsoft BBs that we repackaged into jars and sold for $10 to $15 each online and $3 to $5 wholesale. We ended up making like $100,000+ the first year in sales. And then I think about $200,000 the next year in sales before we switched over to the graphic design business.
Cool. Interesting. How high were you the first time you thought of this as a business?
I don't even remember. Probably pretty high.
Okay. Because you sounded quite analytical. It was like, well, so I was thinking about the market and I was like, what would they like? And they're like, I'm pretty sure you were just high, weren't you? And
exactly. Yeah. No. So like back in the day when we came up with this concept, we were living in a house. It was a Seattle house that I was renting, me and my boyfriend at the time. And I was just doing the freelance like copywriting and marketing kind of full time. So I was just hanging out at the house. We were just like, you know, smoking a bunch of weed. Like we lived across the street from a kind of, you know, complex that had a bunch of little stores, a strip mall. That's what it's called. From a strip mall. So we would just like go across the street and get teriyaki and like all the little things that we needed. So it was, yeah, it was super chill until the house explosion. And then that kind of threw our life for a crazy loop and really made us focus more on business, realizing that like we had to kind of dig ourselves out of a financial hole.
Yeah, interesting. Cool. So what would you say was out of the things that you've done has given you the most joy?
Ooh, great question. Definitely, I would say interacting with people is always the thing that makes me the happiest, especially in person. I love people in person. And so going to trade shows for me is really a blast because not only do I get to make money, but I really get to deliver a lot of positive energy to people. And same thing through social media. So I guess the answer is I love delivering positive energy to people, whether that's through a post on my Instagram or my LinkedIn, or whether that's at a trade show, you know, seeing someone and just like really emphatically, excitingly, you know, greeting them. It's really a powerful thing to feel your own ability to make a true difference in people's lives. I think that's kind of what we all want from being here is to make a difference and for us to not have been here for nothing with the short lives that we're given. And even on a micro level, I think it's very, very fulfilling to spread positivity and happiness and make the world a better place.
Yeah, definitely. And certainly is, and I find it quite difficult when I first started being an entrepreneur to do, well, never thought I'd want to do sales or anything. Think, but then I quite liked what I was selling and it helped people. And you're like, well, I like helping people and I like making the world a better place. And so I kind of quite naturally found myself being quite excited about what I was selling kind of thing. And can imagine, yeah, I haven't done trade shows for anything, but yeah, I'd imagine it'd be kind of good.
They're fun. Yeah. I suggest that trade shows are an amazing learning experience, especially for selling, because you get like repetition like that. Like you don't get this type of repetition and you can make micro tweaks the whole length of the time. So, you know, if in a day, let's say you're talking to 200 people, which is probably like a small number, you can make 10 different tweaks to your sales pitch or your introduction and really like right then in a single day, see what works better or see the effects and come up with like new hypotheses for your sales strategy and interacting with people. It's really fun.
So what were you normally selling at the trade shows? Was this for all your different products that you've had or?
Yeah. So from diffuser beads, where I connected with someone through Instagram who invited us out and gave us some free booth space at one of these trade shows for us to display the product because he liked the product idea and he liked my marketing. So it was like, you seem like a cool person. Come on out to, if you can make it to Atlantic City, you can have some of my booth space and I'll hook you up with a bunch of my like shops that already purchased from me. I'll tell them to buy from you too. And that's literally what happened. We showed up with like a little stack of our jars. And when people would come by to order from him for his products, he'd be like, have you seen diffuser beads? Like, you got to get a case of their jars. And people would just sign up and be like, sure, I'll take 3 cases. We were like, oh my God, this is crazy. Is this how business works? We'd love it. So from diffuser beads then to glass blowing. So glass blowing has been the main thing that I've been going to trade shows in the past, you know, 5 years. There's a really, really strong trade show industry. Again, as the industry has grown, there was like one flagship trade show. There's now a couple of them, but the flagship trade show started, I think 25 years ago, it's called Champs Trade Show. And they grew from having like 20 to 30 booths from their first show to over like 1500 booths at their last show. So it's really cool to see how the industry has been growing so quickly.
Interesting. Do you think like in the long run, in the future, you might like start running trade shows or something and become like a bigger and this kind of things? Or you think you're more interested in like specific products?
If it makes sense. Yeah, I love events. I've definitely dipped my toes quite a bit into running very small events or like parties or promotional type things for the in connection with the trade shows. I think it has to really, really make sense and be something that provides a lot of value and is going to make a substantial financial you know, impact on my life, because events require just such an immense amount of planning and work. They're like one of the most intensive things that I think a business can do, period. So, you know, definitely possibly in the future, but right now it's not like in my sights.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering, you seem to be kind of like trying like big things and not really scared of doing stuff.
Yeah, no, that's very true. If there's something that's big in business and I haven't tried it yet, I have a very strong drive to want to do it just to try it and learn from it. But I've also learned restraint. So in the beginning, I was like, dive headfirst into anything, because like, what's the worst that can happen? Over time, I've learned, oh, that's what can happen. Oh, you can like lose a lot of money. And then yeah, and then like, here's, you know, all the consequences from that. So now I'm much more, I would say, calculated, but definitely not more risk averse. I still love risk. I'm just more patient and thoughtful with it now.
What would you say has been like the greatest risk you've taken?
Definitely, I would say dropping out of college. Like that was a huge risk because I was not going to school for my parents, but my parents were very, very supportive of school and not supportive of really anything else. So I was terrified to like drop out of school because I knew that I couldn't go back home. Luckily, I had my boyfriend at the time to be able to move in with him. But also like we'd only been dating for 2 or 3 months. So like that wasn't a super secure feeling thing either. And also I'd never ever even thought about a life outside of like go to school, go to college, get a degree, be a veterinarian. So I was now in this world where like I didn't know at all what was going to happen, what I was going to do. I didn't really know what my options were. So that was definitely, I'd say, the biggest risk that paid off. It was really up until I would say a couple years ago, more or less a journey of just trying to find happiness. And that just happened to be in entrepreneurship. But I didn't know that starting out. Otherwise, I'd be much further along ahead in business right now. But also, I think you have to go through struggle to find yourself a lot of times. Like you don't find yourself in pleasant and relaxing and comfortable times. You really find who you are when it's hard. And when nothing's going right. And so I feel very fortunate to have gone through that early on in life so that now kind of the rest of my life, I'm kind of set up, you know, to know who I am, but also be aware that like I can change as a person, that I am changing as a person, that like I will always have so much to learn, that there are things that are too risky and to stay away from them, that there are things to be patient for. Like you learn all these things just going through the journey, I think, of trying to find yourself that end up playing out in whatever it is you do, whether that's entrepreneurship, whether that's some career you find that you're really passionate about, whether it's parent, like whatever it is.
Yeah, I really like that answer. I'm a big fan of, yeah, finding ways to make things difficult and sort of having it bring out the best in you usually. And you just find strengths that you didn't even realize you had kind of thing. And
exactly. That's why I think sports is so great for kids, even if they're bad at sports. I know there's like a lot of indoctrination about there, like, don't put your kids in sports if they're bad at them, only put them in things that they're good at. And like, I'm really thankful now. Back then, I hated my parents for this, but they would make me do things that I was, one, either really bad at or really uncomfortable. So like, for example, for school, we used to get Martin Luther King Day off here in the United States. It's just like a holiday to celebrate, you know, a really, really great person who made a huge difference in this world and sacrificed so much. And my parents went, he sacrificed all this, you're gonna sacrifice your free day off school and go to Martin Luther King Jr. leadership camp. And I was like, no, don't make me go. And it was, you know, with all these kids that I didn't know at all and like had to go up and stand in front of like the class and give these speeches and do all these really uncomfortable things, because I also back then was like very, very shy, didn't have a lot of social skills. And, you know, looking back now, it imprinted me in a way that has highly affected me now to understand, wow, when you go through uncomfortable things, you come out on the other side with skills. Even if you hated the experience, being uncomfortable forces you to learn things to deal with the uncomfortability. And in that process, you just come out better, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. I think like the more you do it, the more attractive things that scare you become. You sort of kind of notice them as like a source of like, oh, this is scary. It'll be not scary once I've done it and I'll be better at something. And you're like, oh yeah, I'll do the stupid thing, and can sometimes be a bit reckless. But the general rule, I find it's a really useful thing to like realize.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. And such, certainly like the dropping out of college is like the scariest thing you've done, but then brought you like the biggest learnings and these things. Interesting.
Yeah, which is, I think, an interesting thing real quick, that that's been like the scariest thing I've ever done, because I think objectively I've done scarier things, like taking much bigger risks, so to speak. Like with our first business, Diffuser Beads, we were living in an RV after we were homeless for a bit, and I sold our RV to pay for a booth at our very first trade show, which completely flopped. So like that was an awful risk. But for some reason, graduation was so much less scary than dropping out of school.
Yeah, yeah, the way we perceive things is really strange, just based on like your environment and like everything your parents have told you, or whatever. And this is the life you have to leave, kind of.
Yeah, and your own experiences, and yeah, you know, there's so many people negatively, I think, affected by previous experiences that's holding them back from like really amazing things now and from growth.
Yeah, it's a weird one. So, like, basically, all your perceptions of everything is just dictated by like your memories and stuff. I was talking to my mate last night, and because I managed to shatter my leg kite surfing, like.
Ouch.
So 6 months ago or something. And it's like a few, just over an inch shorter now. And I can't really go running because it's just like lopsided.
Really? That much shorter? Wow.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Just so you know, they have special shoes and insoles made for...
Yeah, I need to... Because like, I got one that sort of is like the right size, but because it's so much of a gap, it's like, it's kind of weird on the rest of my foot. So it doesn't really work. So I need one that's kind of less, but like enough kind of thing.
You need a custom one for sure.
Yeah. But I was just talking about like the perception of like, if... Because I remember when I woke up, I like, just after the surgery, and like I'd had like the last few days with like a leg that was just like this floppy mess and just being like, shit, maybe you're going to have a leg again or something, and it was pain. But I was like so grateful when I woke up. I was like, oh my God, my leg has structure again, and like was amazing. But like, if you think about it objectively, if I just woken up that morning, but like half an hour before my friend had come to visit me and just attacked me and like smashed my leg up, like I'd have probably been pretty pissed off and have been like, wow, you sort of got this really weird leg now. And like, this is your fault. My best friend's done this. I'd have been like tragically sort of sad and unhappy. But instead, because of I'd done it to myself and like, it was just sort of a bit of an accident, and I'd sort of spent the last 2 days thinking I was going to die, and then like having a leg that now kind of almost probably should work, I was like pretty happy with my life. But my leg was still the same as it was either way. But what your brain does is quite different, and you're like, well, why do I care about anything? I mean, all that matters is what is, rather than what happened to make it what is.
Yeah. And once you realize that, it's an incredible like control and power that you give yourself to then go, oh, so I can make anything that's bad into something good with enough practice or mindset or the right level of creativity.
Yeah. Yeah. Like gamify it kind of thing. How can I find the positive in this?
Yeah. That's why I love reading like stories of other people's struggles, is because sometimes I'll read something and I'll think, wow, that was so amazing how they thought about that. Like I could totally see why they're happy, because if I thought about it that way too, and I put myself in their shoes, that thought and that perspective would give me that fulfillment or that happiness. But at the same time, realizing, oh man, I wouldn't have thought of that perspective on my own. Like my natural instinct was to think this sucks, or like, this is such a bad thing. How could it possibly be good? And the fact is, like, anything can possibly be good. You just, you know, given the right information or circumstances or perspective.
Yeah, 100%. We were aligned with this before I carry on making the same point. What would you say has been your biggest failure?
You know, I don't like to think that I've had any failures yet, because I'm still going.
As in it's like a learning. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's more just like steps along the way. It's just a journey to me. So I see myself as an epic life adventurer, and entrepreneurship is kind of just this adventure that I've chosen that happens to be a little bit more perilous and maybe a little bit more exciting than, let's say, the classical 9-to-5 adventure of life that people take. And so within that, I think I've made lots of mistakes. But as long as each mistake has propelled me in the direction that I want to go, it's not a failure. Like, I'm trying to go that way. You know, like if I'm standing here and my ideal self is over here, everything I'm doing is kind of propelling me towards my ideal self, as long as I'm being self-aware and analyzing. I think that process of like awareness plus analysis also makes you more towards what you want to be, because your brain is constantly working. 95% of your brain processes are subconscious. So when you take that 5% and you go, hey, brain, run a program to analyze everything else you've been doing, it goes, oh, okay, let's start like thinking about all these things and like coming up with these different ideas about all your, and it's using your memories and it's using your past experiences to come up with these ideas, to come up with these thoughts that all of a sudden you're like, oh, I just had this great idea. And I think that's the really cool thing about entrepreneurship, is the more you really dive into it, the longer you've been doing it, the more good ideas you just get. Like, you're not trying to think of them. You're just going about your day and you see something and boom, good idea. Or you're talking with someone and boom, good idea. And I think that's awesome. There's nothing failure-esque or mistake-ish about that. I think if you are with the right mindset, it's just all upside. Like, life's awesome.
Which is a lovely and very accurate answer. But also the biggest failure, like maybe the biggest mistake you've made.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So the biggest financial failure I've made would probably probably be, it's a tie between what I told you about selling my RV, which was like our home that we were living in, to pay for a trade show booth that I hadn't like properly done the amount of research to see that the claims they were making about the show were true, and they weren't. So I'm very naive. I have like a very altruistic belief in people that like, why would people lie? Like, we all just want to be friends, don't
we? Yeah, definitely like look for the best in people. And then like sometimes some people are idiots.
Yeah. And so when they promoted this show, they were like, it's going to have a car show and there's going to be like these performances and like all this stuff. And there's going to be hundreds of booths. And there was like 15, 20 booths. It was just like a really crappy show, like the worst one I've ever been to. And so we only made $500 back on spending $2,000 on the booth. And that's like, you know, including all our product costs. So like only probably profited like $200, $300, and then had to stay in a really shady motel for a couple days before we stole our rental car, drove it back up to Seattle, and then crashed in my boyfriend's dad's garage for like a month. So that was pretty big failure. My second one would be when I decided to go into a bigger space for my glassblowing business. Instead of going incremental and going from 800 square foot shop into, let's say, a 1200 square foot or 1500 square foot, I went into a 4500 square foot shop that had like this giant 20,000 square foot yard. I had these big ambitions and dreams, but I didn't have any really planning to back up how I was going to execute on it. I just jumped because we were making extra money at the time. Like, business was going great. And so I thought, whatever, what's the worst that can happen? And then the worst happened, which is that our sales started decreasing. And now we had these astronomically higher costs for our business. So that was a really big mistake and failure because I had to take out like $30,000 to $40,000 in lines of credit and credit card debt to basically get ourselves out of that situation, find someone to take over our lease, move our operations back into a smaller space, and then start to catch up on that debt. So that set me back in terms of entrepreneurship and building business. I've lost about 2 years to having to get back to where I was at the peak of my glassblowing business, just trying to recoup from that financial hole that we had to go into. But at the same time, was still really building on my skill sets of marketing, on relationship building, on communication, on all these things that are now benefiting me much, much more in my consultation and social media business. So the way I like to think of it is that failure gave me the incubation time necessary for me to build up the actual amount of skill and expertise that is required for me to then execute at the thing I'm doing now. So if I hadn't had that time, I would be more faking it till I'm making it in my position now versus like right now I feel that I'm a true expert, a true practitioner. Like I am 100% confident in the choices that I make and not doubtful of them. And yes, I make mistakes still. And sometimes I say, I think this is going to work and it doesn't work. But it's not for lack of experience, confidence, or knowledge. It's just because there's so many variables in business.
So good set of lessons and interesting stories. What would you say is your biggest dream that you're still yet to do?
Yeah, my biggest dream that I'm still yet to do is create a family. Since I was young, known that I wanted to kind of have a big family because I've grown up in a big family and I just love everything that comes with like family time and all the different aspects of it. And that's, you know, I haven't had kids yet. I have 4 dogs, so I've been practicing. I'm just kidding. But we're probably going to be having our first kid hopefully in the next two to five years here. And that's something I'm really excited to pursue.
Cool. Well, good luck with that, fighting.
Yeah, I'll need the luck for sure.
Okay, so a few sort of questions on like life stuff. What would you say is one of your earliest memories?
Oh, great question. So one of my earliest memories is at a daycare I used to go to, and it's nap time. It's a very short memory, not very detailed, but just like, I remember the music that was playing. I remember my blankie I was laying on, and I kind of remember a bit of the feeling. This was probably, I don't remember how young, but like somewhere between 3 and 6 years old. That's probably like my earliest memory that I have.
Interesting. Well, glad I asked. What would you say is the kindest thing someone has done for you?
Man, that's a really good question. That's a hard one. I'd say recently is more the easiest thing to remember. I feel like I really didn't experience a lot of kindness when I was growing up, to be honest. Certainly from some adults, but it felt, I think, a lot of the time more like pity than kindness. I think there's a big difference. So recently, I would say it's having someone offer to be my mentor or coach completely for free when they normally charge a significant amount of money, and then really helping me out in ways that I can just feel the kindness. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes you can really just feel when someone's doing something for kindness versus for any other purpose. And that's definitely something I've experienced more recently than in the past.
Yeah, I find it's certainly easier when you have like a good student. It's really interesting to coach them, and you just sort of like, it's almost, you get something out of seeing someone grow and you have a bit of knowledge that they're going to do it. So if you, as a mentee, like listen really hard and like sort of make notes and turn up a week later having done everything they said, do you think you've got better at getting good mentorship from how you are kind of thing, as in just the way you appear? Or
I think I've always been really good at receiving mentorship or any type of coaching because I grew up playing basketball. And I was fortunate to always play at a relatively high level and be coached by really good coaches. And I wanted to win. I'm super, super, super competitive. I think everything's a game. Like, people are like, you know, life's not a game. Business is not a competition. Like, it's all a competition to me. Not in a like mean, get sad way, but like, cause I think competition is one of the most fun things that you can participate in. And I think it makes you better and it challenges you. Like, there's so many great things about it. And because I wanted to win, liked competition, and had coaches growing up, I learned how to be coachable through that process, I would say.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks again to Mayan. If you enjoyed the show, you can catch the second part of the interview with her, where we talk about her favorite books, her tips for TikTok success, meditation, and her formula for life in general. It's a really good episode, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it if you liked what Mayan had to say. She's a great person, true hustler, so I hope to catch you on the show next week. Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.